Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Talk NBA basketball here today on Drive Time Sports. Gearing up for Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Tonight, the Indiana Pacers take on the Boston Celtics. Indiana's had this incredible run throughout the postseason. Did they get lucky in terms of path? Yeah, maybe a little bit. But for all that work, they enter tonight's game a 10.5-point underdog against the Boston Celtics. We'll talk about that. We'll also sprinkle in some Western Conference basketball talk. Joining us, as he does each week, we have James Solis, our NBA analyst. James, it's great to get you back on. I know it's an important day for you, being a Celtics homer. You get Boston Indy tonight. Listen, man, I told you this before we hopped on air. I like this matchup for the Celtics. But you're still cautiously optimistic.
So, real quick, I mean, I drove to work today. It took me about 12 minutes. I could have walked. If it took me 2 hours, I could take public transfer. It took me an hour and a half. Doesn't matter how I got here, I got here.
That's right.
Same thing with the Pacers.
Yep, 100%.
So, as far as the Celtics, man, I'm with you, man. I mean, you were talking off air. Pretty confident we're going to get past the Pacers, and the finals might be a tough matchup. We'll see. But I just... You watch a team long enough, and I've been watching Celtics now for years and years, especially this current iteration, or at least like this kind of generation since the last 6-7 years. And I watch them, and they're very talented, and they will do what it takes for long stretches. Regular season was great, but now it's the playoffs. I watched the Timberwolves against the Nuggets, and there's a certain energy that a team that's really connected kind of exudes. And I'm not saying I don't feel it somewhat from Boston, but the Timberwolves were just so organic and, like, they elevated themselves. They're greater than the sum of their parts. I don't feel that sometimes with Boston. And that's what's kind of concerning me as far as when it comes down to the finals matchup. So,
Before we dive into this matchup itself, what is it about the Eastern Conference and the level of uncertainty that we have seen over the last 3 or 4 seasons? I mean, last year it was the Miami Heat coming out of the play-in round. Remember, it wasn't that long ago. We had the Atlanta Hawks make an incredible run throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. This year it's Indiana. Seems like the parity in the Eastern Conference. I don't know if that's an indictment on the competition. I don't know if it's extremely top-heavy. But, James, that is one thing that you can't ignore, right? Over the last 4 seasons, we have seen some lower seeds in the Eastern Conference really push to get to the NBA Finals.
I mean, you nailed it. It's a top heaviness, right? We know that, you know, it's a dogfight at the, you know, 6 through 10 in the West. And, like, we're talking 45-win teams. We're talking about, you know, quality teams with superstars on them. Well, in the East, sure, we have the Celtics. When they're fully healthy, you could say the Heat. You could say fully healthy the Sixers, right? They're really high quality teams. Who else in the East? Whatever. But then after that, there's a pretty big drop off. A lot more flaws on the teams. And they're just not as high quality as the bottom half of the West. So, and injuries obviously play a big deal right now. Like this season, injuries had a lot to do with, especially in the East. So, I that's why I think Boston's been the class of the league. So far, the playoffs, they've been great. But look at the rest of the East. You know what I mean? I think the Cavaliers will get crushed by almost any team in the playoffs in the West. So
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Indiana's road, as we alluded to, everybody's going to bring up the injuries Milwaukee had, right? Everybody's going to bring up the injuries that New York had. I don't care who was out there on the floor in Game 7. I don't care who it was. We've never seen that at any point in time in the NBA playoffs, a team shoot 67% from the field. And we have seen some matchups in the opening round. We have seen teams with losing records get swept by one seeds. We've never seen any team shoot 67% from the field. So regardless of the route, you have to give Indiana credit for A, taking care of business. And, you know, again, even with a laundry list of injuries for the New York Knicks, it is very difficult to go on the road and win a Game 7.
Absolutely. And you tip your hat to the Indiana Pacers. Like I said, no matter how they got there, they got there. It's not their fault. You play who's in front of you. They played who's in front of them. They got blown the hell out by that Bucks team, right? That one, I think, was Game 5 or 6. They got blown out.
It was Game 5, yeah.
Right. So, like, sure, they have their warts, you know, but, like, it's basketball. So you're still playing NBA basketball players. The Knicks got it down to 6 in the third, and they're missing their starting center. They're missing their starting power forward. Jason Hart was limited. Like, these are NBA players still. So Indiana did what they had to do. Like you said, they scored at an eye-popping number. Hey, the Heat just hit a record number of threes against the Celtics to beat them pretty handily at home, right? So these are the performances that you see in the playoffs from desperate teams. So kudos to the Pacers. I think they're a dangerous team. I don't think it's quite the layup people might think against Boston, but I think Boston can do defensively more than the Pacers can, and the Pacers won't be able to slow Boston down enough, I think.
When we talk injuries and the way it's affected teams, let's not forget the Boston Celtics have had a pretty major injury, and Kristaps Porzingis hasn't really slowed this team down. Again, this goes to the roster construction, by far the deepest team in the NBA, and I don't think anyone is going to argue that. Is this a series where you could see Boston really just resting Porzingis if they were to jump ahead, take games 1 and 2, not really rush him back, make sure he's healthy for the NBA Finals? To me, that's the biggest question in this series, right? How does Boston handle the injury to Porzingis?
100%. And I think we've seen it some. Like he really means a lot to that Boston offense. Now, luckily, Boston's path to the East, like, you know, injuries and who they're playing, they'll be fine. Yes, I agree. If they actually can stop screwing around and win game two, so they're up 2-0, you don't have to rush Porzingis back. Now, you do want to give him some reps. So I'm fine with them bringing him back, playing him, you know, easing him back into the game, letting him shoot a couple threes. Because, but from what I understand, he's going to miss the first 2 games at least. But, yeah, I'd be fine if that happened. And then guess what? You, as long as you're up 2-0, I wouldn't even bring him on the road for game 3 and 4, I guess. So, yeah, I'd be fine with it, man. I think cautiously optimistic is a great term because, you know, I kept saying all year, the Celtics, what they're doing is fine. I got to see them in the finals. I got to see what they do when the rubber meets the road.
Perspective from the Indiana Pacers. I think for maybe the casual fans, right, the fringe fans, lighthearted fans, whatever you want to call them, you might not be too familiar with this Indiana Pacer team, but it was just a few weeks back, you and I were talking about the deal that they made at the deadline, going out and getting Pascal Siakam. And I think if you look at Siakam's stat line, nothing's going to really pop out at you, but this guy has made a huge impact. I mean, we can talk about Haliburton here in a moment. We can dive into Indiana's roster here in a moment. James, the bottom line is, in my mind, there's no way Indiana is sitting in this spot if they don't pull that move for Siakam at the deadline.
Oh, absolutely. He's not a top 10 player, maybe not a top 20 player, but having a guy with his size and his defensive versatility and who can, on a good night, give you 35, right? It's funny because, you know he has his certain limits offensively, and he's much more of a rhythm player, and he has a pretty high ceiling, but he also has a pretty kind of low floor. But, yeah, 100%. He's been the perfect running mate, the perfect fit for this kind of team, very athletic, wants to get out in transition. And he doesn't take much off the table, and he gives them a lot when he's on. So there was a time when people try to speak of him in the same breath as Jason Tatum. I think we all know that time is long past, and he's definitely kind of a B-level, almost all-star, kind of, you know, borderline all-star kind of guy. But he's good. He's a really good player, and he's exactly what they needed.
There was a point in time where Indiana had really floated the name Miles Turner out there an awful lot. It seemed like every turn it was Miles Turner, and he was going to be packaged with Buddy Hield. Like, I heard that time and time and time and time again. Buddy Hield ends up going bye-bye, but they keep Miles Turner. And again, you talked about having a perfect running mate. I mean, it's just worked. It's worked for the Indiana Pacers.
It's hilarious when you look back, and this is, it's probably made maybe Miles Turner appreciate his journey more, because I thought Boston was going to get him at one point. He was floated every offseason. You know, he's on a good contract. He's a good player, but he has his flaws. And it's very much of a case of is the grass greener? And, you know, good thing cooler heads prevailed in Indiana. They kept him. He's he blocks shots. He makes shots. He's great in a role. I think he was slotted too high before, right? He was supposed to be like the second banana, but now he's the third banana. You know, maybe fourth banana if one of the other guys are cooking. And he fits the bill. I like him. He's going to be an X factor for them playing the Celtics, because without a Porzingis to guard, if he can kind of roam around and, you know, luckily Al Horford's out there stretching the floor, because otherwise he wreaks havoc around the rim. So really good player, and I'm glad that he's finally found a groove and a feeling of permanence in Indiana.
Yeah, I know there's context behind every stat line. But when you just look at what Miles Turner has accomplished, look, against Boston, 17-6 is not going to cut it. And you mentioned it just a moment ago without Porzingis, the stretch floor with Horford. 17-6 is not going to cut it. He's going to have a monster series for Indiana to have a chance. To me, Haliburton's going to get his. We know what Siakam can bring to the table. To me, if Indiana has a chance to win this series, it's got to be a monster 6 or 7 games coming from Miles Turner?
So I'm going to say that would really help them, but their whole thing this playoffs has been strength in numbers. Like last game, Neesmith and little point guard T.J. McConnell were huge, in complementary roles. And I think it's more of that for them. Of course, they need they won a game with Tyrese Haliburton scoring like 15 because they have other guys. That's the thing with them. They've shown, I think they have, even in the playoffs, which normally go a shorter rotation, they got 7, maybe 8 guys who can come in and really produce in some way, some kind of impact. And that helps them a lot. So I'm with you. Against the Celtics, he's going to have to really make his shots, stretch the floor, and he cannot disappear. He can't float. But even if he does 17-6, if T.J. McConnell comes off the bench one game and gives you 17, and if Aaron Neesmith explodes for 25 one game, they might be right there.
As the stat that I find mind-boggling here with Haliburton was he was taking, I believe, about 50% of his shots in the regular season. Close to 50% of his shots came from beyond the perimeter. That's amped up to close to 60% in the postseason. Maybe a little bit too reliant on the three-point line, but to point out to what you were saying there about how they do it in numbers, if I'm not mistaken, the highest scoring output for a Pacer in that series with New York was Haliburton with 35. I mean, it wasn't exactly crazy numbers. They were winning games where they had Haliburton scoring 20. Siakam had 22 one game. That's just a testament to what you were saying. I mean, they scored numbers.
Absolutely. And I will say, though, sure, you want Turner to be great, Pascal, but like you just said, Haliburton is the key. He cannot have a 6-point game like he had against the Knicks. He can't have a game where he just, takes 9 shots. That can't happen against the Celtics. He has to be aggressive. And it's funny because, as we've seen, the more aggressive he is, he gets in the groove, and it feeds on itself, where sometimes he looks almost unstoppable. And then when he's not, we saw he looked almost helpless for a couple of games against the Knicks. It's a really strange thing. So the key for Boston would be constant pressure on him. Don't let him play free. And you got to make a play in a phone booth and make him feel the pressure. But, yeah, man, I think, again, we just talked about this, how he gets more he gets more confidence, he gets more aggressive, and he plays better. I feel like that feeds off to the whole team because we saw that last game. The Patriots played great, and the Knicks are out of gas, but they're really feeling good right now. That's something Boston has to look out for. Boston's been chilling, and they've been kind of cruising. They can't cruise because Pacers want to run the ball down your throat every chance they get.
Celtics Pacers again coming up tonight. Game 1, flip side Western Conference. I was dead wrong in the Dallas OKC series. In all fairness, Luka Doncic actually looks much more healthy than I ever thought he would be in that series. And we see Dallas take out OKC in 6 games. Flip side, you get Minnesota scoring a big win over the Denver Nuggets in Game 7. To me, I don't want to diminish anything with the Indiana Pacers. I'm not giving them much chance against Boston. But this series between Dallas and Minnesota just has the feel of some old-school basketball that I think is going to be highly entertaining.
It really does, man. Both of these teams are very talented. They're very much who they are. We're seeing role guys really step up, from Jaden McDaniel to T.J. Washington. Like, this is what the playoffs are all about. I think it's going to be a really exciting series. Edwards is already tossing his hat out, saying, "I'm going to guard Kyrie." It's going to be intense. It's going to be physical. There's going to be trash talking on both sides. I want to say that the Timberwolves have the upper hand. It looks like, but styles make fights. Whoever can imprint their style in this game is going to win this series.
Yeah, am I off by thinking that we have now entered a new era of the NBA? In my mind, I got David Stern's era. There was a lot of hatred, man. A lot of teams did not like one another. There were heavy, heavy rivalries. I felt towards the end of Stern's tenure as commissioner, moving at Adam Silver's, maybe it was the generation of players that kind of shifted a little bit. There was more of the player fraternity era. We're coming out of that, man. I'm starting to get the vibe of a lot more rivalries, and I think it's good. I think it's good for entertainment. I definitely think it's good for the spectators. Am I off in thinking this?
No, I agree with you. If not so much, you're absolutely right. The AAU generation was very chummy, buddy-buddy. They were McDonald's All-Americans together. They've been playing all together and been friends basically since middle school. So I'm with you, but I feel like we see this new generation of star. They really want to imprint the game. And this isn't LeBron James, buddy-buddy with KD. These guys want to go at each other's heads. They want to prove themselves. Like Anthony Edwards, he respects the older guys, But on the court, he's really trying to take it to him. There's no friendship there. We saw that last series against Denver. There was you know, by game five in the series, you're sick of seeing other guys, and there's real animosity there. And I like that. Like you said, it was a very kind of chummy NBA, and I do feel like now it's coming out more. These guys are saying, hey, we're here. We're not here to be the young guys. We're not here to be accoutrements. We're not here to be playing the sideshow to LeBron James. We're here to take the reins, and we're going to have a new champion this year. I think this is the first time in, like, over, 20 years where we had a champion who hasn't been an MVP or a former champion, you know what I mean? So, like, the new generation's taking over.
A new generation is. No, I think it's great for the spectators. It also gives me the vibe, and I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into this. Maybe the two are not connected, but when I watch a young guy like Anthony Edwards or, we'll take a Jason Tatum, for instance. I mean, you can just go down the list, a Luka Doncic. I don't get the vibe that player movement is going to be necessary. Superstar player movement is going to be as drastic as it once was either. And I think a lot of that has to do, as you said, not being chummy with one another. They seriously want to go at one another, and that's what makes it so fun.
Yeah, and also, like, I think front offices are getting a little more savvy. So they're realizing, hey, I got this top 10 guy here. I got to keep him happy. Keeping happy is spending money, is putting a viable team around him so that he gets a chance to maybe, you know, have a first-time flash chance at a conference finals, right? We weren't sure what they were doing over in Minnesota, but look at him. Look what they're doing now. He's 22 years old. So if they keep a competitive team around him, why would he leave? Because people are going to come play with him. You know, he's such a magnetic personality. Same thing with Luka. There was always muttering about Luka and what's going to happen if they'll. But boom, they're in the conference finals. Jason Tatum's not going anywhere. He's the prince in Boston, right? He's the prince of the city. And Tyrese Halliburton, they traded for him. They gave him the kind of players he needs. That team is tailor made for him. So yeah, I think in a few years, some of those second tier All Star type guys are always going to be on the move, right? But as far as big, and also let's be real, contracts are not going to really allow it. Right?
That's right. No, you're right.
Superstars just make too much money to say, hey, three of us on one team. Two of them on one team is going to be prohibitive. So yeah, man, I love the fact that we're going to have franchise bedrock guys. And sure, the front office has to move around them, but no more the Miami Heat big three type stuff.
No, and we can end with this. Even though I do believe Boston is going to take out Indiana relatively early in this series, I think we got a grudge match in the Western Conference. We can agree that this is probably the most compelling or competitive. I don't want to say competitive. This is the most compelling Eastern-Western Conference Finals that we have had in quite some time.
I'm going to say competitive because I think normally we kind of have an idea, like before the series starts, this is the favorite. And sure, we've seen upsets or whatever. But for the most part, we have a pretty good idea who's going to win the series. I have no idea in the West.
I don't either.
You know what I mean? And then with the Celtics, I think it's going to be really competitive. I have a feeling Boston's going to win. But I love the fact we have new faces, new schemes, newer teams. We're not just seeing, let's be real. Hey, Steph Curry and LeBron had the finals in a chokehold for over a decade. You know what I mean? So it's a turn of the page. It's an unknown, and I love it.
Yeah, before it was LeBron and Steph. Before that, it was Kobe and Duncan. Before we've seen this go through in waves, literally over the last 25 years, right? And it's featured nearly four to five of the same players. This is a completely new generation. It's a completely new era, and I think that is exciting.
Yeah, and I hope that the NBA fans can really embrace that, right? I love LeBron. I love Steph Curry. And they are still there, but the spotlight has moved, and you have to move with them. You can't keep holding it on. So let's just – I'm glad we're getting new guys to hold up as face of the league.
He's James Holis, kind enough to join us each week as we get set tonight, Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals, Celtics-Pacers. James, where can we find more of your work and appearances?
I'm with my guys, the Bodega Cat Squad, Casual Die Hard. We have a podcast you can find on all platforms. My man Jesse and my homegirl Ace, I'm on socials at Snotty Drippin. Homage to the great Scottie Pippen. I don't know if you know this. I'll tell you. I just did a show with the Count the Ding guys talking about Temecula. So anybody out there, just Google James Holis in Temecula, and you'll find the new podcast, and it's pretty it was fun.
The Temecula story. You know what? In the off season, when everything dies down, let's do a segment on the whole Temecula deal. For those here locally, probably don't know too much about that. But it was a wild, wild night, and I would like to talk to you about that once the season dies down.
This is a 10-year anniversary this year.
That is wild to me.
Talk about it.
Well, that's wild to me that was 10 years ago. That was one of my first introductions to you, by the way. I think it was around that. That was the first time you and I actually started talking.
Well, hey, I'm sorry that was your first introduction. I'm glad that we're still friends.
Yeah. I can't wait to talk about that once the season's done. James, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time.
All right, brother. Always good talking.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. We'll talk some Major League Baseball, and of course, we will continue our season recap interviews here locally. That's coming up tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 p.m. right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. From the Sutherland Studios, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. I am out.